Today's May 25th, 2026. Current Bitcoin price is $77,656.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
Happy Memorial Day, Rick.
Yeah, it's a fairly nice day.
It is. It's kind of a little bit cloudy because you said you were doing some yard work earlier, right?
Yeah, it was perfect for that.
Yeah, getting a little bit of shade with the clouds. It was actually kind of already warm though this morning.
Yeah.
We didn't have those typical cold nights. And it's weird to say Happy Memorial Day on a Memorial Day. Like, I mean, it's not like Veterans Day, right? Like, these are people that have sacrificed their lives for the good of our country, at least here in the United States. So, weird to say that, but it's a day off of work.
Yeah, that's really what it's about. I mean, thank you for your sacrifice so I can sacrifice a day of work.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound pretty selfish? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But that's totally, like, that's American right there. Merca.
That's Merca.
Merca. It's kind of interesting. We're going to go into something on this episode that Rick kind of brought up, and I think it'll be kind of an interesting dive. We'll dive into it a little bit deeper, but this cycle that we're going to talk about is from 150 years ago, right?
Right.
But we'll explain a little bit more when we get into that. First thing, though, we're going to go into is how are our theoreticals doing?
Theoreticals, you know, they were doing a little bit better last week, you know, with the price at 78,000, but we're at 77.6. So it's gone down just a touch, but not too bad. First theoretical purchase in October 2023. If you would have put $3,000 down, you could have bought 0.0885 Bitcoin, and that $3,000 investment is now worth 6,873. So still more than double. Not too bad.
Not too bad.
Second theoretical purchase was over 2 years ago now, back at the halving in April 19th, 2024. If you put $1,000 down, you could have popped 0.0156 for Bitcoin. That $1,000 investment is now worth $1,215. So you're still above water. It's just not as glorious as the first one, for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely for sure. And it's weird because, I mean, we're going to go into some of the ETF charts themselves, but I pulled it up this morning, taking a look at how the charts were moving. And if any of you ever want to see any of this stuff, we do have it under the Discord channel for us, under the BitByte podcast. So if there's any visuals or anything like that you want to see, like, they're always posted on there. They're just in the general text chat channel. You should be able to get in there and take a look at that if you ever decide you want to join us on this adventure when we're recording. But it's a bloodbath on the ETF charts.
Yeah, there's just a few things, splotches of black in a sea of red.
Yeah.
I mean, this is almost getting crime scene level bad.
It is. It's across the board. And we did see, like, you know, we were talking about how right now we're sitting at 77,656. It wasn't too long earlier in the week that we were way down. Bitcoin always throws me for a loop because I get so used to Bitcoin movements and it's, you know, it's drastic compared to any other market, but we were at 74,000 earlier this week. So, it's good to see it kind of rebounded a little bit in price. Although, I mean, we're not seeing a whole lot in the way of positive movement for stuff that's upcoming, but it's slow news. I don't know. There's not a whole lot going on. Everybody's still focused on Iran and the conflict.
Yep. And it appears that they are working on some type of negotiation to end the war. We'll see. I mean, I don't know. It's just crazy listening to, like, Trump talk about it. Oh, we already, you know, and a lot of people who are pushing for it. It's like, oh, we've already won. You know, we sunk their navy. We've done X, Y, and Z. We've destroyed a lot of their infrastructure and all these things. And it's like, oh, well, how's that Strait of Hormuz going?
Yeah.
Oh. Is now Iran, basically, we gave them, showed them what power they can exercise over the world. And it's like, yeah, I mean, if anything else, you know, they've destroyed our presence in the Middle East. And we've given their source of power with the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, I guess we did kill their president, but is this new guy better?
Probably not.
I don't think so.
He's probably going to be more hardline, especially now that he's going to have a vendetta.
Yeah. Oh, he is way more hardline. They killed his whole family, basically.
Yeah.
When they killed his dad. Yeah. No. But, you know, that's just me. Political rant over.
Political rant over. Yeah, Bitcoin, the demand hit its most bearish level in a year. ETF saw the largest single day of outflow. Macro's tightening again, and then it's been nuts. So looking at the ETFs, we've seen basically the lowest demand level so far for 2026. On-chain apparent demand drops to 160,000 Bitcoin, lowest in over a year. Looks like retail is really not buying during this level. There's just a few new people entering the market, so like not a new amount of wallets coming online. And then it looks like long-time holders are selling, which that typically, you watch them, especially the whales, right? Like whatever they're doing, they'll start to offload when they think we're about to go into a crash. And it kind of forces a crash. So you're confirming what you want to have happen through what you do. And then ETF flows are turning negative, which that chart is a perfect example of.
Yeah. Pretty ugly.
Yeah. I did see one post on X. Actually, no, it was on YouTube this morning that somebody was talking about, Bitcoin's about to break to 100,000. I don't think so. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, I wouldn't expect to earn a profit on any purchases you make in Bitcoin until sometime next year.
Yeah.
By today.
I agree. And I still think we're going to have that major sellout. We haven't quite seen it yet. And I know like people don't like to hear the doom and gloom, but I'm not being doom and gloom. Like, I mean, overall, this is just part of the structure of the market. Although the trend, we can't match it for what it used to be. It seems like it's just an odd cycle. And I know we talked about that ad nauseum on this podcast. Like we keep on talking about how this is just a weird cycle, and it truly is just a weird cycle. But, the big question is like, what are we setting up for right now? Are we just waiting with bated breath to see what's going to happen in the Middle East? And that's probably the case.
Yep. Well, and I don't even know if we've really run through the full consequences of everything that's happening in the Middle East, you know, talking about, you know, the 20% of the oil supply, but then even a larger portion of the fertilizer comes from this region. So, and this conflict basically took off in end of February, mm-hmm. beginning of March.
Yeah.
I mean, that's before planting could begin. So how many farmers are kind of screwed on their fertilizer situation or paying way more for fertilizer than they would otherwise?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right on the head with that, is that we're not thinking about what the long-term consequences are. It's more than just oil. The fertilizer, those types of things, like there could be food shortages coming in the fall, a bunch of different stuff that's not quite, you know, the second order consequences that aren't really thought of, and third order and fourth order.
And that's because they don't show up immediately.
Yeah.
It's that they're further downstream.
Lagging indicators.
Yeah, the lagging indicators. So, I mean, depending on how bad things get with all these things that we're talking about, maybe things will be going crazy on sale towards the end of this year or early next year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Man, we're just full of positivity here today. The other thing,
well, we've got something... Go ahead.
What were we going to say?
I was gonna say, we have something positively interesting with this chart we'll get to in a little bit.
Yeah. Next thing, and we already kind of hinted at this with the ETF outflows. We had $648 million on a single day of outflows. That took place on the 18th. So that was huge. Even IBIT sold $448 million out that day. And a lot of it was triggered by the political movement around the Clarity Act, which, I mean, I'm glad that we're seeing some positive movement in the passage of the bill itself. But, you know, Bitcoin dropped $6,000 in hours that day. I don't know. And that goes back to, are the ETFs good for Bitcoin? What are your thoughts?
I don't know if, I don't really think they're necessarily the greatest thing for Bitcoin. But it is but it's something that's real, and it's getting a lot of people who would not be into Bitcoin into Bitcoin. So that part's interesting. Though they're not fully in it, if you have the ETF. I'm still sideways on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's something that we can measure. I mean, that's one good thing. We can measure what a lot of normies are looking at with Bitcoin, and they're putting their money in or yanking it out.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on that. And I think, honestly, I think that's part of the reason why the market has been so unpredictable in the way that we had with the traditional 4-year cycle, is because of the ETFs. And along with the ETFs, then a lot of paper Bitcoin comes along with it. Not necessarily from the ETF itself, but then when you start getting in the options and all those other things that starts to take place, futures markets, and there's a lot of stuff that starts to just kind of multiply the number of Bitcoin that actually exists. And I don't think the ETF necessarily, I think it's just the harbinger of that. Once the ETF exists, all those other things can start to be built. But that could be why, you know, we're at a much higher price than where we would be. And I don't know, I think about back during this last cycle, retail never really seemed like it came to the party.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been saying that for a while. You know, retail never got back in. I mean, there was a lot of people who got crushed in the last round of Bitcoin. I mean, people who got in would get crushed anyway. Like, if they didn't realize the 4-year cycle, I mean,
yeah,
that's just kind of part of the thing with Bitcoin. And, you know, the 4-year cycle even happens with the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the one thing I will say for the ETFs is it seems to have buoyed the Bitcoin, because the Bitcoin's rise and fall would be so crazy. And now it's more leveled out. It's not as intense as it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. And I would completely agree with that. I don't think we're not seeing the magnifications of the moves that we used to see because I don't even remember, like, and maybe I'm such a bad person at this. I don't remember seeing the major sell-offs, like where we had 40% corrections during the bull market. We didn't have anything quite like that this cycle.
Yeah. No, there was that one in, was it June 2021, where it went down from 60 to basically 35?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty intense.
So, yeah, I agree with you. I think it is buoyed. I think it is kind of, it's dampening, but I think that works both ways, like in both the positive movement and the negative movements.
Exactly.
The last thing that we want to bring up before we kind of get into this old chart here is Fed rate cuts due to inflation. Like, we've all been at the gas pumps. We know what it's like in the grocery stores. Rate cut odds right now are sitting to 1% for June, July. Market expectations for easing fall from 47% to 29.9. Higher for longer equals tighter liquidity and Bitcoin headwinds. Like, Bitcoin typically thrives on cheap liquidity. And that's all being caused by the geopolitical tensions that are going on in the world right now. So more than likely, we'd talked about how, you know, we've been wanting to see a reduction in interest rates, which make borrowing cheaper. And then typically that freed up money, cash flow, will flow into riskier assets. And Bitcoin is still kind of in that risky camp. So right now, with the way that the macro headwinds are heading, with inflation on the rise due to the conflict in the Middle East, it looks like we're not going to get an interest rate cut, at least not for the summer.
I wouldn't expect it, especially, I mean, inflation just picked up last month, so we'll see. I don't know, it's just kind of an interesting time to be watching this, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up Trueflation real quick. Let's see what it's showing. It's probably going to be 2% because it's always 2.19 is what Trueflation is showing right now. U.S. government reported rate is 3.8. So, yeah, nothing that's going to ease up. Now, so and kind of before we got going today, Rick brought up something interesting, and it was called Samuel Benner's market cycle. Some people know this as the pandemic or the panic chart. And apparently this was created by a gentleman by the name of Samuel Bennett, an Ohio farmer ruined in the pandemic of 1873. He published the chart in 1875, basically mapping recurring cycles of panics, good times, and hard times. His chart forecasts market turning points all the way to 2059. So tell us a little bit about the chart. Like, how did you hear about it, Rick?
Well, I first saw the chart in, I think it was the Fourth Turning. It's a book about different generations. It basically says that there's, you know, every cycle, there's four generations and, you know, something happens. So in 80 years, there's usually some type of upheaval. The previous upheaval, like 80 years ago, you know, we ended World War II. Well, 81 years ago, we ended World War II. 80 years before that, America went through our Civil War. 80 years before that, you know, it was the Revolutionary War. So there's some interesting things that happen every 80 years in this, with four generations. But this, it's just an interesting cycle to look at. But one thing that they alluded to, or they pointed to, they put this chart in here. They talked about how this guy, Samuel Benner, basically created this chart, and it mapped out different panics. It also mapped out good times and bad times within the stock markets. And it's just really fascinating. I mean, there's certain things that kind of line up, especially like it really starts lining up in 1927. It says 27 is like a good year to panics happen to occur. So it's like 1 year off there.
So 1927. So I guess to kind of look at some of the historical references and kind of the cycles and the way it's happened and what's aligned on the chart with what, I guess, what historical event happened with what aligned on the chart and how that kind of went. So 1927 was pre-Great Depression setup. 1945, which if we're looking at the chart, that is going to be the next big peak. And that was World War II, global restructuring that took place. 1965, which is our next peak, inflationary setup. 1981, the Volcker recession. 1999, the dot-com bubble. 2019, we all know what happened in 2019. Pandemic crash.
Sure, right?
Yeah. 2035, and that's the next projected panic, is what we're looking at right now.
And then 2053. So it's kind of interesting that he mapped this out to basically 2059.
Mm-hmm. And it's been fairly accurate.
Yeah. And that's on the high line. There's like there's technically three different levels to this, right? The A and the B and the C, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the A line is all the ones we mentioned. The B lines are kind of what he called good times, high prices, and time to sell stocks and value of all kinds. And it's pretty much nailing. I mean, in my lifetime, it was, if you would have, you know, in the dot-com bubble happened in 2000, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dot-com bubble, year 2000. But it says on this chart, if whatever you do, sell in 1999. And then whatever you do after that, you don't buy until 2006.
Yeah.
Or 2005, sorry. This is an old chart scan. Looks a little bit blurry. And then the next time you sell is in 2007. What happened in 2008?
Yeah, that's when we had our housing crash.
Yep. So, I mean, that and there was a lot of things that went down. The stock market went down pretty drastically too. The next peak was in 2016. I don't remember how bad it was. I remember the stock market going up pretty crazy in 2016. It wasn't really that bad on the prices in 2017, but the next high point to sell, it says, is 2026.
Yep. Yeah. And so, I mean, you can't say like this isn't giving you the exact date, but roundabout in these terms is where you're looking for. So like we had our huge one in 2019, right? Like what you were brought up. And then it said the time to buy would have been 2023.
Yep.
And then now's the time to sell. Or, you know, and it's not saying necessarily like right this moment, but sometime in 2026 is going to be the time to sell or offload. And then we're going to go into, you know, down to 2032.
And that's the time to start loading back up on things that you can, because everything's going to be cheap in 2032.
Yep. And then we'll have some sort of a big crisis again in 2035. Now, and I think the interesting thing is like he found a rhythm and it repeats in 16, 18, and 20-year cycles for the panic years, which I don't know how he discovered this. He must have researched quite a bit. The good times happen in 8, 9, and then 10-year cycles. Hard times happen in 7, 11, and 9-year. So it's not, it's a weird cadence.
It is a weird cadence. I don't know. It's really fascinating. So, you know, something to look up, Samuel Benner, B-E-N-N-E-R, is that?
Yeah, B-E-N-N-E-R.
Yeah, just look up his chart from 1875. It's really fascinating. This is something to think about. Maybe, you know, and I'm calling for things to really go down maybe sometime later this year or next year. Maybe this is the year to kind of, I don't know, sell your house, sell, just, you know, liquidate some of your stocks, get into cash. It's just an interesting it's an interesting thing. And this guy's proven more correct than wrong.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting pattern. I think that's the biggest thing to bring out of this is that it's crazy how those patterns that he was able to research, and apparently he had done research on this for quite a long time, trying to figure out the method of the madness, why he lost everything. Right. And this is what he came up with. And it's even from being published back in 1875, it's still dictating things. Like, it's not specific as to what it is that's going to happen, right? It's just that these seem to be a natural cycle.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't know that COVID was going to happen in 2020 and that 2019 was a good year to get out.
Mm-hmm.
But he nailed it, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So, no, it's pretty crazy. And, you know, in 1981, the Volcker recession, that's basically, Volcker was the head of the Federal Reserve at the time, and he cranked up interest rates up to 20%.
Yep. Yeah. You were basically getting credit card interest rates to borrow money at that time.
To borrow money, to buy a house, to buy a car. I mean, that is insane.
Yeah. That is nuts. That had to have hurt a lot of people. But yeah, it's something to bring up. I think it's definitely kind of interesting, especially for kind of slower news cycle. We're waiting for everything else to pan out still with the Middle East. So I don't know. So it's food for thought. I think investors are still using it today. So I think that's kind of interesting. They look at this chart, man. You know, historically the best entrances, best times to enter are the C years. If you look at the chart, just look it up. And that's like 2008, 2020. Sell during the good times, which are 1999, 2006, 2026. And then brace for the panics, which is supposed to be coming in 2035 again.
Really interesting.
Yeah. I was kind of glad you brought that up. I thought it was a very interesting chart. So anything else you want to bring up today?
I think that's it for now.
I think that's it for me too. Well, thank you all for listening. We do ask that you share this with people. We always enjoy doing these recordings with you all, and, we hope that you get something out of it. And I think it's always a good time to start dollar cost averaging into Bitcoin. Like, you don't want to put a whole lot into it, but we're still waiting for something to happen where we're going to get a little bit of a sell off this year. So, and you got till 2035 before a panic happens. So you got a little bit of time, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. So thank you all for listening.